Hey everybody, I'm back with another episode of Track Talk. Today's episode is an excerpt from episode 60 of Live from My Drum Room with the great Simon Kirk, of course best known for his drumming with Free and Bad Company, two incredible groups, two very influential groups. This was November 22nd, 2021. And in this little excerpt, we talk about the song All Right Now, of course, Free's biggest hit, and Simon's iconic drumming on that song, the quarter note pulse and the hi-hat. We'll talk about that, and you'll see that that was not the original way he played that song and how that evolved. Also, we talk about Paul Rodgers playing that clave part throughout the song, the great Paul Rodgers. And we segue into Bad Company, first record. We talk a little bit about the song Can't Get Enough of Your Love and that iconic intro, his count off. That is Simon Kirk that does that count off to start Can't Get Enough of Your Love. And we kind of touch on the recording process, the band's connection to Led Zeppelin, and all those cool little factors around Bad Company. The full episode, I'll put the link in there so you can watch it. It was a great episode with Simon. If you haven't watched it, check it out. But I think you'll enjoy this little bit. And of course, I'm going to play those tracks, All Right Now and Can't Get Enough of Your Love. All right, so sit back, enjoy. I hope you like it. I'll see you on the other side. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. You know, and I'm going to just jump backwards for a second. I remembered the chat we did a few weeks ago when we had the big group, the little remembrance for Charlie. And our friend Greg Bissonette mentioned our good friend Greg.
Great drummer. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I didn't know. He mentioned that when you recorded the original sort of version of All Right Now, you were playing eighth notes on the hi-hat.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was, so how, I'm just curious to just know how that sort of.
That's a great question, because when we started it, I don't think I ever played any songs. You know, I was a lot younger then, obviously, and it wasn't a question of saving my energy, but playing eights, after a long time, just didn't feel right. It felt a little constricting. Mm-hmm. And I was very much enamored of Zigaboo Modulus with the meters. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember hearing, I believe it was Looka Pai Pai, one of the famous meters tracks. And he was doing this dunk, bump, 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 bump. And he was doing bump, bump, bump. But you know, just fours on the hi-hat, and it just sort of stuck in my head. So when we'd done All Right Now in rehearsals and in sound checks, I'd always played eights, and on the live album Free Live, you'll hear before we actually recorded it, I did a version with eights on the hi-hat. But anyway, getting back to the recording of it, and I remember it so well. After about three takes, I thought, you know what? I'm going to try this. So instead of dun, 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 I did dun, 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 dun. And I could do these little hiccup, what I call little hiccup strokes on the left hand on the snare. And it worked really, really well. It also allowed me to be less economical with my energy. Because I believe we did this song about 20 times with false starts and so on and breakdowns and whatever. So, I believe we used take six. It just sticks in my head. Wow. But there was just something very freeing about playing fours on the hi-hat. And I do it to this day. And we still play the song and I love playing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and when you guys were talking, when you and Greg were talking about that last time, you know, I tried to, I'm going to have to get I'll download the live version and listen to it. Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a different feel entirely.
It must be, because I can only hear that song.
Yeah.
You know, that way it's such a, I mean, I can't even put into words what that song is. It's an institution, you know, I mean, it's like one of those songs that all us drummers, you know, of a certain age, like it's one of those songs that you start off playing. It's the groove is so contagious. Infectious, you know.
Well, I'll let you into a little secret, because it was, I think it was kind of born or influenced by Honky Tonk Woman. I remember sitting in Paul Kossoff's apartment. And every, you know, I lived with him for several months. And of course, we were completely, we were young. We were listening to all songs, all sorts of things. And I remember Honky Tonk, and that was in open G. And Keith, he didn't have a bottom E string for all the guitarists out there. He had open G, and he started with this bam, 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 and that lovely brat, that sort of tumbling into the beat that Charlie had. And it just, that kind of thing stuck in my brain subconsciously. I never consciously copied anything, but All Right Now, became this anthem, really. And whenever and wherever we played it, it just went down a treat. But I am regretting to this day when the guitar solo comes in, because I'm doing that running thing on the snare. And that's hard. That's a really hard thing to build and build and build.
Absolutely.
Because the solo, you know, goes over, I don't know, 64 bars, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I always think, why the hell did you, why did you do that, man? But it's worked for me, and I love the song.
It's great, you know. It's one of the first songs I can remember, 1970, listening to it like in my dad's car, you know, radio, little cheap radio in the car. One of the first songs that you could really hear the bass drum, you know, like the bass drum was so out front as opposed to records that you heard on the radio in those days. And I just remember, like, not even realizing the effect it had on me. It created this driving, pulsing groove, you know. And when you're like 9 or 10 years old, you don't really understand what it is until later, and you go, that's so cool.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. I remember at the time, you know, Cream were huge, and I always thought that Ginger's drums are always mixed very badly, and way back in the, considering his kit, his bombastic style, the Cream, the studio album, not the live one, Wheels of Fire, is incredible, one of the great live albums. But I always thought that his drums were way in the background, and the first couple of albums of Free, that I always felt the drums were a little just a little back in the background. So for the first time on Fire and Water, which is the album that All Right Now was taken from, I was in on the mixing sessions, and I, you know, maybe when the engineer wasn't looking, I would just sort of inch up the bass drum fader, because I was in love with James Brown, the band, and I always, you know, that doom, what they call the one, the downbeat, was so important, because it was a springboard for the rest of the rhythm. When you've got that doom, boom, 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 it's like a, if you don't have a real good solid downbeat, you won't have a good backbeat. So when we came to mix All Right Now, I made sure that you could hear the kick drum, and I love it. Yeah,
really. Yeah. And it sounds, when I listen to that now with a real critical ear, it sounds like you're playing the front head on the bass drum too. You can hear a little,
little
bit of residual boom to it. Is it?
I think it was, because I remember having a conversation with Bonzo, who stubbornly refused to take off the front head, and he would cut a little hole. That was his, you know, that's what he would give the engineer, and that was it. And I think I did the same, because when you take the whole front head off, it tends to emasculate the bass drum, you know, because a bass drum is a bass drum, and you're going to have a little bit of air going back and forth between the batter head and the front head. But I remember we did cut a little hole for the mic, whatever the mic was. Yeah,
it's a great sound. And you had also mentioned that it's Paul Rodgers playing the clave. On that song.
Why do I remember that? It was 50 years ago, but yes. I was playing maracas, he was playing the clave, and then me and Andy Fraser, we were on our knees behind a Hammond organ on the bass pedals. Right at the end, you'll hear these big octave A's, and it's he's taking one end of the foot pedals, the bass, and I'm taking the top. Oh, okay. The things we did, you know. But who knew? It was
Yeah. And those percussion parts were played. So Paul's clave was overdubbed later. It wasn't like during the rhythm track.
It was done later. Yeah.
Wow. And then so fast forward to Bad Company, which was like a year after Free disbanded, right? Basically you and Paul.
Yeah. Free finally ground to a halt in early 73. So we had 5 years and we had a couple of lineups and a lot of problems with drugs and dear Paul Kossoff, finally succumbed. And then I went away. We just sort of exploded and Paul Rogers went off somewhere. I went off somewhere. And then I called him up a couple of months later and said, hey, what are you doing? And he said, well, I've met this great guy, Mick Rouse, from a band, Mott the Hoople. Mm-hmm. And Mott the Hoople were on Island Records, like Free. So we'd seen each other in the offices. Hey, man, how are you? La, la, la. Yeah. And I always liked him. And he said, Paul said, well, he's leaving Mott. He's a bit disenchanted and he wants to form a band. Would you want to play drums? And I said, I'd love to. I've always loved Paul singing. We always got on well. So that was in early, maybe March 73. And then we spent, 4 or 5 months looking for a bass player. And then we finally, got a guy, Boz Burrell.
Yeah.
And called up Peter Grant. I mean, I'm kind of thumbnailing everything, but we said at the time we wanted a really good manager. Who's the biggest band in the world? Led Zeppelin. All right, let's get hold of Led Zeppelin's manager. And we did. And Paul called him. And and Peter Grant was great. He said, Paul said, oh, well, I'm getting this band together. And Peter said, I know, I've heard it. I mean, what? So I know all about it. The rock and roll industry is a little village. Yeah. And he knew that he knew all about us. And he came to see us and offered us a recording contract with Swan Song.
Swan Song. First band signed to their label, right? Well, that you answered a question I was going to ask, which was, did you have some pre-history with Peter Grant or it sounds like he knew who you guys all were. And as you say, Paul called him and that set it in motion. So,
I'd never heard of the guy quite honestly. And you won't believe this, but his band before that was this band that recorded Winchester Cathedral. I can't remember the name of the band, but they went on tour. Peter Grant was this legendary. I mean, he really was a legendary road manager / tour manager and ultimately a manager. Mm-hmm. And as I said, in the late 60s, the whole industry was really shoehorned into this area in London, West London, around Oxford Street. And Island Records had an office above Peter Grant's office. We never met him, but he was with a guy called Mickey Most, and they had rack management, and they managed a bunch of different artists. But anyway, long story short, he hooked up with Jimmy, and quite honestly, Zeppelin were originally Jimmy Page and Peter Grant's band. Mm-hmm. They hired Robert and Bonzo from the Band of Joy, this wonderful band, blues band from the Midlands, and they became the new Yardbirds for a while because the Yardbirds were contracted to do a whole bunch of gigs. And Peter, being the clever guy, said, well, you know what? We'll call this band the new Yardbirds so we can honor these gigs and then we can become. And it was Keith Moon who came up with Led Zeppelin's name,
I heard that. Yes. Yeah.
One of the great names in rock came courtesy of one of the great owners in rock. Yeah.
Did he say something like, he'd heard about the band and he said, it's going to go down like a Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. It something like that. It won't get off the ground. It's like a bloody Led Zeppelin. And I don't know who was at the meeting, but it was like, what a great name. And of course it was LEAD. And yeah, someone said, well, we'll take the A out. And because it just wouldn't be the same now, would it? LEAD Zeppelin.
No.
LED, man.
Yeah. So the first record, so the band formed in springish of 73.
Well, no, the final lineup was when Boz came on board October 73. We recorded the album a couple of months later, and we sort of hit the world in 74. Yeah.
And I'm guessing, I mean, I listen to that record all the time. That's one of the greatest debut records ever made. You know, I put that alongside Led Zeppelin 1 and all these. I mean, and then there are many more after that, but in terms of a debut record, it's just, you know, it holds up.
Thank you.
Almost 50. Yeah, absolutely. And I would guess that it sounds like you guys went in the studio and you had all those songs written and arranged and rehearsed and just were able to just, I mean, not to say there wasn't any, you know, creativity in the studio by any means, but that you had them all working.
You're absolutely right. That's a very good point, because what happened was, while we were waiting and while we were auditioning bass players, we had this sort of 10, 12 songs that, you know, Mick and Paul and, you know, we and myself had written Bad Company, and we just kept doing these songs over and over again with different bass players. And in fact, when Peter Grant first saw us, we didn't have Boz. We had another guy who was kind of hanging around. He was pretty good, but then he disappeared. So what happened was, around November 73, Peter called Paul Rodgers and said, look, Hedley Grange, Zeppelin have taken some time off. John Paul Jones has got the flu. Hedley Grange is nothing's happening. You want to take it for a week or 10 days? We said, hell yeah. And we just dived in. All Zeppelin's gear was there. Bonzo's kit was up in the on the first level in the hall, which is how he got this incredible When the Levee Breaks. They recorded When the Levee Breaks there. So all of Zeppelin's gear was there. And, of course, not knowing, wish I'd taken photos. But, you know, we just, you know, what the hell. So we steamed in and we recorded all the basic tracks, I think, in about a week, and then 4 days, and then took another 3 or 4 days to mix the album. So we were like, you know, dogs chasing a greyhound, chasing a rabbit out of the gate. Boom.
Yeah.
We had everything arranged and off we went.
What a great sounding record. Dumb drummer geek question. The count off, Can't Get Enough of Your Love. Is that you, or is that?
Yeah, it's me. Well, you have to remember that we were spread all over this vast manor house, which is why we got this amazing separation, because not one instrument was in the same room. So I was down in the basement with the kit, and Boz was next door in a boiler room with his little bass rig, and the other guys were upstairs. So I'd say, hey, everyone ready? 1, 2. So I counted it off just to get everyone's attention. And I do believe it was the first track that we ever recorded on Bad Co. So there was an air of expectancy about the whole thing. Here we go. 1, 2, and then go bra, and then in. And then when we got into the mobile, the studio, and we heard the count off, I think Paul Rodgers said, hey, let's keep it. Little knowing that it would be this sort of.
Hey, what is this? Now, baby, maybe she's in need of a kiss. me tell you now. I took her home to my place, watching every move on her face. She said, look, what's your game, baby? Are you trying to put me in shame? I said, slow, don't go so fast. Don't you think that love can last? She said, love, love above. Now you're trying to trick me in love. All right now, baby, it's all right now. All right now, baby, it's all right now. It's all right now.
All right, well, that's my show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, give it a like, leave me a comment. And remember, the link is in there to watch the entire episode from November 22nd, 2021. So please check that out. Check out all the other episodes of Live From My Drum Room and Track Talk. If you haven't subscribed already, please do subscribe. You can watch all these on YouTube and download all the podcasts wherever you like to get your podcasts. Remember, no drummers are ever harmed on Track Talk or Live From My Drum Room. And drummers, when in doubt, leave it out. I'll see you real soon with some new episodes. Thanks for watching, everybody.